Welcome to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, I'm going to try to explain the reasons behind the things that happened and what it might mean to you and me. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through His Torah, which means teaching, not law, and by way of His covenant, a relationship which features five very specific conditions and five benefits. If you are an atheist or an agnostic, or you know that there's something not quite right with your religion, this will be the best part of today's program. Our phone number, should you wish to question anything I say, or just provide a comment on something that you hear, that number is 877-300-7645. Now on to the news. In this morning's news segment, before the show began, we heard a debate between those who would like to impose more regulations and those who would like to forestall regulations for a while longer. In reality, regulations and freedom are the opposite of one another. The more we regulate, the less free we become. And Americans in particular have accepted enormous today, if you want to go take a flight across the country, it's going to cost you at least 2 to 3 hours more than it would have otherwise. And all of the what used to be a fairly enjoyable process is now going to be dehumanizing and demeaning, all because our government does not know how to properly defend its citizens against a religion, in this case, Islam. But that is true really throughout our society. The worst part of the whole thing is that when we have economic recessions like many countries around the world are currently enduring, including the United States, the government, which is comprised of people that have very poor understandings of the mechanisms behind business and therefore economic growth, always think that they're there to solve the problem and that if they do more, which means if they impose more regulations, that everything will be peachy keen in the future and that the same things that caused the recession will be mitigated. But the reality is it's just the opposite. It is government interference in business that causes recessions. This last recession is a direct derivative of the government's long-standing desire to encourage people to buy and own houses and therefore make money artificially cheap and way too easily available and way too much money available to homeowners at, you know, adjustable rate mortgages at sometimes 100% of the purchase price to people who could not afford those mortgages. And because of the government interference through Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and other legislation and pressure on banks, we artificially inflated the housing market, making it way too easy to buy without people having to invest in their own properties. They could borrow all of the money. And then what happens is that you go to any disruption, and in this case the disruptions were government planned, that constrains the money supply or changes the interest rates, as is a automatic timed bomb in adjustable rate mortgages and people can't afford them, then a disproportionate number of people have to sell their homes at one time, which floods the market with inventory, which drives down the prices, which means that the majority of homes now are underwater. They are worth less than they are than the amount that is owed on them. And that is what created this last recession. It was all orchestrated by the Federal Reserve and by your government. And so the solution by government is to impose more regulations and to increase the power of the Federal Reserve, which will take us not in the direction of a solution, but in the direction of greater and more frequent calamity. So the more we regulate business, the less robust our economy will be. The more we regulate people, the less free people become. Now, one of the easiest way to impose regulations on people, to cause them to behave, to cause them to toe the government's line, is to have a boogeyman. And politically, patriotically, boogeymen have been the means behind the madness for years. In every Islamic country where poverty is stifling, where there is no hope, where education is essentially non-existent, where there is no business vitality, where people live in poverty because of their religion, the religion is never blamed, because if you blame Islam in an Islamic country, they will kill you. The politicians are never blamed, because they are typically dictators, and if you blame a dictator, they will kill you. And so what everyone does is they wring their hands and say, you know, the reason that things are bad here is because of those horrible Jews over there. That was Germany in the 1920s. Now, they didn't blame their impoverished condition on their expansionist notions in World War I. Nope. They wanted to blame their poverty relative to where they thought they should be on Jews. Now, was there any correlation between Jews and their defeat in World War I? No. But all you have to do is find a boogeyman, convince people that it is their patriotic duty to lash out at that boogeyman, and you will get them to do all sorts of things that are otherwise foolish, including giving up their freedom. In America, we saw this play out with 9/11, and we gave up tremendous freedom based upon a farce, this notion that we are somehow at war with Al-Qaeda, that we are at a war with a tactic, and that tactic is terrorism. It is an absolute farce, but when politicians speak of it, when militaries march off in pursuit of it, people are prone to be patriotic, and they acquiesce, give up their freedoms, give up their ability to think, reason about these things, and it leads to lots of dark places where people end up being controlled. I'm going to talk this morning about a story that occurred last week. The story itself is minor, but it brings out a major insight that is extraordinarily important for us to understand if we're going to understand the world as it is, and if we're going to understand the world as it will be in the next 15 to 20 years. A suicide bomber carried out an attack that killed 7 people. That's not really right. The attack killed 6 people. The fact that the suicide bomber killed themselves really ought not count in the number of dead. And this suicide bomber injured 30 in a bus transporting Israeli tourists in Bulgaria. Israel has said that Iranian-backed Hezbollah militants were to blame. Don't know if you know this, but Hezbollah means the party of Allah. Hezbollah is not just influenced by Iran, it is Iran. Hezbollah is as much a part of Iran as the U.S. Marines are part of the United States. And it is a terrorist organization. Now, we must be careful there in making certain that no one thinks that because Israel said that the Iranian-backed Hezbollah was involved in this, that the enemy is Hezbollah. It isn't. We can't even go to the point and say the enemy is Iran. Well, the Iranian government is an enemy of Israel and of the United States. The only reason that Iran and Hezbollah are hunting and killing Jews is because of Islam. Now, We are all told, and when we study history in school, that there's been this Arab-Israeli conflict. Now, that's not true. And the moment you begin to see what has transpired over the centuries as Arab-Israeli, then you are absolutely destined to miss reality. Muhammad, who was most likely either half or quarter Jewish, he was born in Yathrib, which at the time was two-thirds Jewish, even named after the God of the Jews, Yahweh, who just so happens to be the creator God of the universe. They dominated the population of that community. Muhammad's father is unknown. Muhammad's mother fades out of the picture immediately, and Muhammad becomes anti-Semitic, which very often happens in these kinds of circumstances. Kind of a little bit like the Hitler past, where Hitler became anti-Semitic, found out that he was Jewish, and then went in and tried to bomb the town out of oblivion that held the records of his past. Muhammad met in his first Quranic recital, the 96th surah of the Quran. As he describes it, it's very similar to Paul's experience on the road to Damascus. And in both cases, because both say things that are satanic and speak of demon possession following the encounter, that both men met either Satan himself or an agent of Satan, either Paul on the road to Damascus, both, not either, but both Paul on the road to Damascus and Muhammad in the cave. And the spirit was very difficult on them, very hard for them to endure, and then began to inspire them. Hasatan is a real individual. He is not overly powerful. He's certainly not overly omnipresent. He does not look like the little horned guy that is a caricature of him. He is brilliant and beautiful. He appears as light. He appears as Muhammad and Paul described him. He never wants to be known as the adversary. He wants to be known as God. And so when we come back after the break, we're going to talk about how Satan caused Muhammad to be anti-Semitic and why Islam, therefore, today seeks its highest calling to hunt down and kill Jews, and why we should care about that. Time. Welcome back to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, military and economic schemes. Our phone number for today's program, if you would like to call, is 877-300-7645. During the break, I had the opportunity to speak to Scott, who's the producer of this program, when we were talking about libertarian advantages politically. You know, it's so many of the listeners to many of the hosts here at the Genesis Communication Network have strong libertarian leanings. If I were political, I'm not, but if I were political, and if libertarianism could be removed from the from politics and be considered more a philosophy, if you will, I would be a libertarian. I believe that the more we limit government intrusion into our lives, and the freer people are to make choices, so long as their choices are not caustic to other individuals, the better we would be as a society. And one of the things that I shared was that if you were to take the politics out of being a libertarian, and you just think of it as the extreme in free will and giving people the maximum opportunity to express their free will, and you think of it as minimizing the influence of government and religion and other institutions in people's lives, if you were to define libertarianism that way, then God himself would be a libertarian. He wants us to actually walk away from government, from being patriotic, from being political. He most certainly wants us to walk away from being religious. He wants us to walk away from the influence of human institutions, and he wants us to use our free will, which he gave us, to make choices where we intelligently respond to what he is offering. So it is actually a related topic to what we're talking about here, which is the rise of anti-Semitism and why Islam is anti-Semitic, why they hunt and kill Jews. And the reason is that religion is one of those devices that has a tendency to minimize people's liberty, because it creates common think, it creates a defense to evidence and reason, and it limits people's choices. For example, in Islam, you will hear from time to time about a Muslim who doesn't want to be a Muslim anymore, and they may choose Christianity or Zoroastrianism or something else, or just to be an agnostic or an atheist. And what the Muslim family has been ordered to do in their Quran, and what the Muslim community has been ordered to do in the fourth surah of the Quran, is to kill that individual. In Islam, if you choose not to be a Muslim anymore, Allah orders good Muslims to kill you. In the Quran, rather than saying that people have free will and you have the opportunity to choose Islam, which means submission if you wish to submit, which is the opposite, of course, of free will, it doesn't say that you have the opportunity to submit. Again, submission, surrender, is the opposite of freedom. It says that Allah has chosen the religion for everyone, and you either accept that religion, accept its imposition on you, or his good Muslims have been ordered to kill you. And so there is a tremendous affinity between the extreme and the connotations of libertarianism, not as a political concept, but as a philosophical perspective. And what Yahweh has to say, he wants to free you from all of that kind of thing. And yet, what we find is the opposite of libertarianism embraced religion like Islam. Now, they're not alone. During much of its 1,500-year existence, the Roman Catholic Church, when it had the opportunity to impose its will, was extraordinarily oppressive. And it has always been the case when religion and politics have merged and the empowered, religiously and politically, have had their sway over individuals, they have always usurped the individual's freedom for personal gain. Now, returning back to Muhammad, as he was inspired in his first revelation from this very dark and demonic spirit, he ran home to his wife and he said, "I fear for my life, I have been possessed." Well, Christians will debate forever about what the thorn was in Paul's side as he spoke about that thorn in his second letter to the Corinthians. Paul himself explains what that thorn is in his side, and he says it is Satan. And so he too admitted that he was demonically possessed. And once we come to understand the alliance between Satan and religion and the goals of Satan, we can understand anti-Semitism. We'll be back. Where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics. Our phone number, should you like to ask a question, is 877-376-45. What we were doing is discussing the association between Christianity and Islam and anti-Semitism and how it grew and why it would grow out of those religions and manifest itself in animosity towards Jews. And what I have done thus far is associate religion with Satan, particularly the two most famous religious founders, Paul, who was the founder of the religion of Christianity. There's absolutely no place whatsoever that you can associate Yahusha, which is the real name of the Christian caricature known as Jesus Christ. You cannot in any way create a religion out of anything he said and did. He was anti-religious. So the creator of the religion of Christianity is Paul. Paul, by his own admission, was demon-possessed. His primary thrust of his letters was to criticize and attack the Torah. That was his enemy. He was a false prophet, just as was Muhammad. But Muhammad took it to a different level, where Paul's rhetoric against Jews was extraordinarily harsh and demeaning, anti-Semitic, even though Paul himself was Jewish. But Muhammad was in all likelihood Jewish as well, and he took his rhetoric against Jews to an entirely different level. His animosity to Jews is kind of an interesting story. And if you understand the Muslim and the Christian animosity to Jews, then you can understand much of the violence and the erroneous perceptions that permeate our world today. What Muhammad did is, because he wasn't a very smart guy, but he was extraordinarily covetous. He wanted sex, power, and money. That was the drivers in his life. And he wanted to pretend that he was the messenger of God. But the problem that he had was, he began his initial surahs by quoting the poetry of Hanafs in Yemen, who were effective at presenting pagan gods through poetry. But he soon ran out of material in copying them, and he needed his god to be seen as more real, more credible. So what he did is he went to rabbis in Yathrib and asked them to recite portions of their Talmud, which is Jewish oral law. And as they recited it to him, he took portions of it, twisted it to serve his interest, put himself in the middle of it, and used that to create his Quran surahs. Enormous swaths of the Quran are actually twisted and plagiarized from the Jewish Talmud. But what happened over time is that the rabbis began to laugh at him and say, come on, we know where you're getting this. In fact, you're even paying us for these citations. And so Muhammad realized that they had the goods that could prove that he was a complete fraud, and he turned on them and began to kill them. And there were three groups of Jewish communities in Yathrib, making up about two-thirds, maybe three-quarters of the population. And systematically, Muhammad turned on those who could expose him for the fraud that he was, and he murdered the men, he raped the women, and he enslaved the children, stealing all of their property. And Islam is founded entirely on the proceeds that Muhammad achieved through this process. That is the overwhelming story of the Islamic Hadith and the story of the Quran as it moves from Mecca to Medina and we begin the Islamic era. So from that point on, Muhammad is a raging anti-Semite. His most famous attack happens to be at Kabar, where Muhammad, armed to the teeth with his militants, comes up to a Jewish farming community. It's only there because he expelled them in his first attack on a community in Yathrib. And he then wants the Jews to know that his God is better than their God. Now, the God of the Jews, which is the creator God of the universe, he is the author of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, is Yahweh. And so Muhammad decides to have his people scream what became the Islamic prayer of fear, which is Allahu Akbar. It does not mean God is great. It means Allah is greater. Greater than whom? The God of the Jews. Allah is greater than Yahweh. Now, when you study Scripture, what's the first thing that you find out about the nature of Satan? What caused Satan's problem? He wanted to be seen and worshipped as being greater than the Most High, that he saw himself as God. He wanted to be worshipped as God. That's why when you look at religion, you say, hey, I don't see any Satan here. The reason is that he is disguised in it. He's not trying to be worshipped as God, excuse me, as Satan, as the adversary. He doesn't want to be known for who he is. He wants to be known as God. Now, the most effective tool that you can have if you want to fool people that you, the adversary, are in fact God, is to attack the messengers that Yahweh has chosen to reveal his Torah, prophets, and Psalms. They are Yehudim, which we have corrupted to mean Jew. Yehudim means related to and relate to Yahweh. And so by creating his religions to be anti-Semitic, Satan encouraged people to hate Yahweh's messengers. So if you hate his messengers, rather than associating the Torah with Yahweh, for example, you'll begin to associate the Torah with Jews. Rather than associating Yah's covenant with him, you begin to associate the covenant that's in the Torah with Jews. If you then take this the next step, the lone path that we can walk to God, which is through Passover and unleavened bread and first fruits, rather than thinking those, wait a minute, those are God's set apart days for us to experience the gifts of the covenant, they become Jewish holidays, and those Jews are bad, so I'm going to hate them, so I'm going to oppose them, and that is the whole mindset that creates anti-Semitism. The Muslim who looked like everybody else, this has nothing to do with race, who killed the five Jews and the bus driver in Bulgaria, was following the orders of his God, was following the example of his prophet. And this happens every day across the world. Now, it is true that the majority of Islamic suicide attacks are not aimed at killing Jews, although Iran's principal purpose in life is to wipe Israel off the map. They think that if they usher in the Mahdi, which is this leader that will unify the Islamic world in a war against Israel, that if they usher in his age and prepare for that battle, that they will be considered the saints of Islam. But in reality, for all of their history, Muslims have been far more vicious against Muslims than they have against anyone else, which is why there are suicide attacks perpetrated by Muslims against Muslims far more often than against any other people. In that, even there, Yahweh has a perspective that he wants us to understand. You see, Muhammad claimed to be a descendant of Ishmael. He claims that Islam is a derivative of Ishmael. Now, of Ishmael and his descendants, Yahweh said they will be wild asses of men. Their hands will be raised against their brothers' hands against them, and they will live in hostility against the whole world. Now, if that doesn't sound like your morning newspaper explaining what happened yesterday in Iraq, what happened here in Bulgaria, what is happening around the Islamic world almost every day in the Islamic world, I don't know how much more prophetic insight you need to recognize that he's adroitly described what would be derived from the descendants of Ishmael, which is Islam. We as enlightened people, if you want to understand the world as it is, as opposed to the world of myths and propaganda, have to come to understand that while God is extraordinarily disappointed in the Israelites, in Yehudim, because they broke his covenant relationship with him, he is going to reconcile that relationship, and his messengers have all been Yehudim. They are the scribes of his testimony. And when we develop an animosity to them, then it precludes Yah's blessings to us. Because the moment you become anti-Semitic, the moment you move down that path and become like so many fundamentalist religious people have become, then you will end up precluding the message that Yah wants to tell you because you will associate it with Jews as opposed to with God. And that's the reason why he speaks of, you know, those speaking of Abraham's descendants, which, by the way, is the covenant, not so much Israel, it's the covenant, but that those who have an animosity towards the covenant versus those who are willing to embrace the covenant, he talks about how one will end up cursing an individual in a society, and the other will end up blessing that individual and society. So what I want you all to have an appreciation of is that it's counterproductive to be anti-Semitic. I also want you to recognize that one of the things that comes through almost every article where it talks about Israel being singled out by Muslims for a suicide attack or some kind of a terrorist attack, Israel responds by saying, okay, we're going to go after those who perpetrated this. We're going to hold them accountable. And I'm here to tell you that is very often counterproductive, that approach very seldom works. First of all, once you, like Hezbollah or Hamas, will send rockets indiscriminately into Jewish community centers, and then Israel will respond by firing rockets from airplanes down at the place from the rockets were launched. And they are responding to an attack, but it looks like, okay, then both sides are involved in a conflict, both sides are bad, let's just ignore both sides. Sometimes when you respond like that, you actually create a bigger mess for yourself. You're almost always better off when it comes to an issue like this, like Islamically inspired suicide bombings based upon anti-Semitism or just born out of the nature of the religion of Islam, which calls for the whole world to surrender to it, that there is a tool that you can use that will radically diminish its influence. And that is the truth. Wielded effectively, wielded boldly. If you're willing to shed the societal mantra, the religion, for example, of America now is political correctness and multiculturalism. If you're willing to say, I'm willing to be judgmental, I'm willing to examine the evidence, and I'm willing to be exercise good judgment based upon the evidence, then and explain very strongly, you can diminish the influence of such things. Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics. At the end of the last segment, I was trying to conclude a point that I'm not sure I did all that eloquently, that there, when it comes to understanding the root cause of anti-Semitism and to deal with it, the thing that is the most effective tool to wield is evidence and reason. And they are infinitely superior to bullets and bombs. Bullets and bombs will make this worse. But if you come to understand what Islam is, and we're going to spend a lot of time trying to understand this religion so that we can respond to it rationally, we can respond to it in a manner that makes our situation better as opposed to worse. And The point that I wanted to conclude with is use words, not bullets and bombs. Second, the reason this is all important to you, and I want to always talk about the news in the sense of why this should matter to you. And you might say, I don't really care about Muslims killing Muslims. I don't care about Muslims killing Jews. I don't care about terrorism so long as it doesn't affect my life. Let me tell you how it's going to affect your life. Yahweh has had 100% track record on his predictions. He predicts that World War III will be an all-Islamic war against Israel. What we're witnessing right now in the Islamic war with the so-called Arab Spring is a Islamic reformation. The more fundamentalist Muslims become, the more Salafist they become, the more anti-Semitic they become, the more enraged they become, the more prone they are to attack Israel. We are only 15 years away from the Magog War, where Muslims in a collective whole are going to attack Israel. It's going to cause World War III. According to Yahweh, in the first phase of that war, one out of every four people on earth are going to die. In the second phase of that war, one-third of those who remain are going to die, which means that half of the population of this planet is going to die because we remain ignorant and tolerant of Islam. That's why it should mean something to you. We have Larry now on the line. Larry has either a question or a statement that he'd like to make, and it may take longer than the time we have, so we may carry over until after the break. Larry, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you today, Yada?
Wonderful. Thank you, Larry.
Well, you know, the reason I'm calling is, you know, it's pretty obvious that Islam was made up out of whole cloth. you know, maybe a cross between the Babylonian Talmud and then also the, you know, the wild imagination of a guy that made his career as a slave trader, better known as Muhammad.
Correct.
Yeah, you know, and it's pretty easy for people that are raised in a Christian background to see that. But yet the same people seem to have a hard time understanding that as badly as Muhammad contradicted Yahweh's words, Paul did every bit as much. And,
wow,
and they can see Islam for what it is, but they seem to have a real hard time seeing, you know, what Paul was about. And I'll take the word of the Creator over any man's word any day.
Lur, can I ask you a question? Have you read Prophet of Doom?
Yes, I have.
Have you read Questioning
read
Paul?
Questioning Paul, yes.
Okay. All right. And you've probably read Yada Yah.
Well, I've studied it for more than 6 years. Yeah.
Okay. And have you read any of my most recent book, which has actually got posted online within the last couple of weeks? Yeah, The Introduction to God?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Passed it out
so,
a number of people.
Can I ask you another question? And I'm hoping that you'll stay with me past the break because you bring up so many issues. And I want to address the issues that you brought up, but I'd also I'd like to use you as an example, if you don't mind.
Sure.
How did you first come to read the first of the books that I had written?
By the way, good radio station. And you were discussing Islam.
Okay. Well, we're coming up to the break now, and we're going to move into the second half of our program. But the subjects that you're talking about here are so essential to people's perspective. And so what I want to ask you at the after the break is what was your mindset when you first heard the my presentation of Islam and its connections to terrorism on that radio show? And how did the evidence presented in Prophet of Doom correlate with what I had to say? Now, we'll have to pick that up after the break, Larry, but can you stay with us?
Yes, I'll do that. Sure.
Thank you. Thank you.
There's a guy named Dr. Wallach who is anything but your typical doctor, both a veterinarian and a naturopathic physician. Doc asks, why is this country spending more money on healthcare? By far, and